Today's show, Michigan responds to the NCAA and the Connor Stallions case, and we are all over it. So is Brett Bielema.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
That was all revealed in Sign Stealer, the tremendous Netflix doc where a certain heartthrob had a starring role.
Russ Dellinger.
I may have gotten an email inquiry from Nyko Sports.
And SI's Pat Forty.
That said backpack that may have contained hard drives or whatever is in the bottom of a lake somewhere near Ann Arbor.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
Welcome to the pod, and hey, nothing like a nice late January update from Content Stallions.
Our midwinter savior. Way to go, Content.
The Michigan advanced scouting scandal is churning through the NCAA's enforcement investigative process. And our own Ross Dellinger with the big story yesterday with the details of Michigan's response to the NCAA's allegations against them. It is 137 pages. Billable hours. We need Nyko Sports to put out a commemorative football for the undefeated seasons.
Dana,
of billable hours.
I may have gotten an email inquiry from Nyko Sports yesterday. I haven't committed to anything yet.
Okay. Pods off the rails in the first minute.
It was a long day yesterday, but I'll get back to them.
We cannot have two sellouts on the show.
Two sellouts. I passed your email along, Pat. Okay. Nyko Sports and these tremendous 2025 Ohio State commemorative footballs that they're selling asked me for your guys' contact information. And obviously, I passed it along, and I will be taking a 15% NIL agent fee for any deals commemorated. Yeah. My NIL deal is I am bringing NIL money to the pod. I'm lifting all boats. All boats rise.
What's happening is Ross is positioning himself to accept Wetzel blood money here. That's what's happening.
Blood money.
Pod has lost all ethics.
Go cook on your green egg. And I've heard people, you're a wimp for not cooking in the green egg all year round. This whole bit has gotten so much better than I ever anticipated when I first heard from Nyko Sports. This is content. This is better than Content Stallions. It goes on and on. Anyway, if you can promote, you know, okay, you get a deal, you get a deal. A deal's a deal. Pat and his blood money. Mr. Purity.
That's right.
Please.
That's right. I'll stand firm against this incursion into our pristine podcast.
Ross and I will be bathing in money.
That's right.
We don't care. Anyway, back to the real scandal, not Pat Forty manufactured outrage. Michigan responded with 137-page document, a portion of which Yahoo Sports obtained. They're fighting. Although only to so much. This is a little like going, this is second degree murder, man. Not first degree. Don't charge me with first degree. This is a crime of passion. Connor Stallions wanted to win so bad. A crime of passion to his buddies to go out and film opposing sidelines to help him secure some of the signs that he would then decipher and alert the sidelines at Michigan of what play might be coming, what formation, what they should do, all of that. We're going to get into it. A quick reminder, because this is where this whole thing, it is legal to steal the signs if you're doing it off of television, if you're doing it off of coaches' film, if you're scanning the internet for homemade videos. Actually, a random fan could just post all of the information, the sideline, and put it on YouTube. That would be fine. You can also have your friends at the other schools tell you what they saw and give you detailed and precise indications of all the signs that are stolen. What you can't do is it scout, advanced scout in person. You are not allowed to go and to another stadium and scout the other team. And the NCAA says that what Connor Stallions was doing with his friends, which they allege, and is a violation of that very nebulously worded rule. So that is the issue. So just remember, it's because this is going to, everyone's going to immediately be like, wait, they stole. That's the rule. You can't advance scout. And Michigan saying, yeah, we that did happen. Connor did do that. Is this how I'm getting it, Ross? However, he was acting alone. Sherrone Moore's deleted text messages don't show anything. Harbaugh didn't know. Blah, blah, blah. This was a crime of passion. Punish us, but do not give us the gas chamber. We didn't do murder one premeditated. This was murder two. How am I doing with that, Ross?
Yeah, that's the gist, right? They claim that it that the sign stealing system offered minimal competitive balance, number one. Number two, the NCAA didn't credibly enough prove that it was this rampant thing that a bunch of staff members knew about it and participated in it. And number three, because of number one and number two, it should be treated as a level two case, standard case, and not a level one more serious case. So that's kind of the gist. I mean, I found, you could imagine, in the 137 pages, which took about 3 hours to sift through, that there's a lot of like embedded, certainly embedded nuggets in there that I thought were really interesting. Number one, Dan, that the call came from within inside the big house, right? The original tipster of the tipped off the NCAA originated from Michigan's campus, according to Michigan in the response. Not only that, but Michigan, you know, the case right now goes to the next step is going to the Committee on Infractions. And Michigan says, is requesting that there be a hearing before the Committee on Infractions hearing to discuss the tipster that came from their own campus, number one. And number two, they believe the tipster was used as a witness for other allegations that are in the document, in the notice of allegations. And they believe they expressed concern over that, about the credibility of the witness, since he was basically, you know, a rat. And so they're like, in his identity has not been revealed.
Witness, or rat, depending.
Deep big house.
Not a Houston drug rat.
Deep big house. One of the things that one of the things that the school says is that the NCAA can only present evidence and infractions based on information that can be attributed to individuals who are willing to be identified. So the thought is this individual has not been identified, and not only did he tip you off in the investigation, but they also may provided witness testimony to some of this. So that was really interesting because obviously we heard a ton last fall or two falls ago, or about a year and a half ago, that Ohio State was involved in this situation and tipping off the NCAA or Ryan Day.
Ryan Day's brother personally investigated. I was told to so.
And now we know the school, actually, Michigan actually reveals, no, it came from our own campus.
Mm. Funny how that worked out.
Yeah. This is all very interesting to me. I have a number of questions.
Go ahead, Dale.
Who has seen the notice of allegations?
They're not responding. Responding to Freedom of Information Acts on anything.
Yeah, they're not responding. Yeah.
You would think that these are the codes to keep the nuclear plant safe.
Yeah.
But that law does not really work. Why do we even have Freedom of Information laws?
We'll see how much longer we do.
ESPN got a draft of it, remember, back in August, and got a draft of the notice of allegations.
Oh, right.
I got a draft of the notice, and then a subsequent report from a Mr. Dan Wetzel that the notice is expected to change. Yeah. So we're getting a document responding to something nobody's seen. So I would like to see the original document to know exactly what is being responded to, what the NCAA's evidence is, and what then the counter is. And yes, to your point, Dan, you used to be able to get this stuff. Like, the University of Kansas would turn over a notice of allegations and a response to the notice of allegations, and then you could actually read all the stuff. So, but this is not that, clearly.
Let me address it real, Pat. I'll address that really quickly. Is that in this document? Obviously, it reveals a lot of information that certainly was in the notice of allegations because they're responding to it, right? So it goes through each allegation, 11 of them, six of the 11 level ones, also six of the 11 related to the Stallions, five related to recruiting violations. So it goes through each one of them and rebuts and refutes most of them, probably eight of the 11, nine of the 11. It refutes at least portions of it. So, you know, it is in there, some of the details of it, but you're right. You know, we haven't seen the complete detailed version from the NCAA and from the enforcement staff. But it does in the response, it does detail each allegation in kind of refutes the NCAA's evidence of each allegation.
Okay. Do you want me to get into the nitty gritty here?
So let's start with the inside the house. This is a lot here, and we're deep diving, man. We're deep. This is the whodunit. I said all along, I didn't really think they'd probably wasn't Ohio State that hired Ryan Day's brother to be the private investigator. But boy, did we want it to happen, because that would have been awesome. Sometimes the rumors are too good to be true. I mean, it would have been delicious. But
the purchase order from Ohio State Athletics we need 20 hours of Ryan Day's brother as an investigator.
Yeah. Signed off by Ryan to his brother. Like, we would have had a nepotism. I mean, it would have been fantastic. Apparently, no. The inside the house, some would call those whistleblowers. Some would call them, because there's a federal prosecutor who listens and will immediately tell me that we should not allow him to be referred to as a rat. It's a cooperating citizen.
There you go.
Who witnessed a crime.
Yeah.
Depends how you're going. Depends how you're going with that. But anyway, there is a saboteur. I mean, can you imagine Harbaugh? He undoubtedly knows exactly who this is. There could be nothing more painful for Harbaugh than a saboteur inside his program. That would hurt. That would hurt Jim Harbaugh. If your goal was to hurt Jim Harbaugh, you have succeeded. Saboteur, rat, cooperating witness.
I will say, yes, it was more fun for everybody to run wild with Ryan Day's brother, but I was told immediately that this was a disgruntled staffer or former staffer.
Yeah. Oh, well. Anyway, go ahead, Pat. Now go on to your next thing. I just wanted to get that one out of the way. Because it was my dream, but...
Yeah. A couple of things here. Let's start with this one. Connor Stallions only attended one game, I said. Yeah, we know that, and we know what game. And he was in disguise as an assistant coach on the sideline. That's level one aggravated right there, man. Like, what a... It was just the one time that he faked being an assistant coach on another team. Like, who cares how many games he attended if he attended that one game? What's the response to that one in the document, Ross?
That was not in the document. That was not an allegation. But I tell you what, Central Michigan will probably have that one.
Yeah.
Central Michigan will have.
I think that might come up in the hearing.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, did you guys see one of the this is related to that, is one of the text messages, which we can spend a whole segment, I'm sure we will, on the text messages between Stallions and Sherrone Moore that Sherrone deleted. But one of them is about a Central Michigan assistant coach, Jack Costner, who
Jake Costner,
who visited the basically Stallion sent a note to Sherrone Moore in April of 2023, saying that Jake was going to visit the facility to meet with Sherrone and discuss Central Michigan's opening opponent that year, Michigan State, because Michigan and Michigan State played very often. And they did, I believe they did meet or were planning on meeting according to the text message. And of course, that's the game, Central Michigan and Michigan State, that Stallions was allegedly at in his disguise. And Costner was fired from Central Michigan this past fall amid the NCAA investigation. So that text, I thought, you know, it caught my attention.
Quick question, and I'm not, that is actually legal though.
Oh yeah, that's
legal.
You
can have the coaches from the other team mm-hmm. come and meet with you and spend 3 days laying it all out.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's not cheating.
Correct.
Connor and allegedly in Central Michigan gear, which potentials alleged looks like spy glasses. That would be illegal. So again, this is the
being at the right.
Yeah, but oddly, you person. Could sit down with the entire Central Michigan coaching staff, could leave, spend the entire week before the Michigan game in Ann Arbor going through everything. And somehow that would be okay.
Right. Well, another thing that's legal, I mean, another interesting bit, again, related to that, is that Michigan reveals that Stallions traded opponents, signal plans that he created for Michigan opponents with other schools. And other school staff members, specifically from Rutgers in Nebraska, according to the document, traded their signals to Stallions. They traded their opponent's signals that they had done to Stallions. So this happened quite often.
That was all revealed in Sign Stealer, the tremendous Netflix
the documentary.
A certain heartthrob had a starring role.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Heartthrob.
matinee idol, Pat.
Yes. The Connor himself, maybe.
No.
Another point here. Only 8 of the games were attended by Michigan staffers. How many is too many? I'm going to suggest maybe 1 is too many. Only 8. What? Again, we're mitigating something here that it's a clear violation. What is...
Were they staffers or what were they, Russ? Or were they friends?
They were student. Like a couple of them were like student manager, low-level support staff. There are a couple of student managers. In fact, there's a story in there of one student manager who refused to do it. Connor Stallions wanted him to go to a Georgia football game. The kid was 18, and so he couldn't rent a car at 18. So he decided not to go and went to one of the assistant coaches, Chris Partridge, who was eventually fired by Michigan, went to Chris Partridge and said he didn't want to participate in the Stallions advanced scouting. And Partridge, according to the Michigan response, said he went directly to Stallions and said, "You're not using this kid in your signal organization, stupid thing." There you go.
Mm-hmm. But none of the assistant coaches knew about this.
Chris
Partridge went to Connor Stallions to tell him to keep the manager out of your scheme, but they didn't know there was a scheme. That was another point that I had written down here.
Seems to be a problem with that down there.
Yeah, that one's where it starts leaking some oil.
Yeah. Not only that, but Partridge.
They're saying they did it. They just, you know.
Yeah. Well, there's another story in there, too, of Mike Hart. You know, then the running backs coach, he got a call from a Rutgers staff member in September of 2023 saying, "You guys are going further," quote unquote, "going further than most do when it comes to sign stealing." And Hart said he went and brought attention to it to Jesse Minter, the defensive coordinator. So now we at least have 3 full-time coaches who knew something that was going on.
A little smoke.
It sounds like Partridge probably knew more than any, but 3 full-time coaches and probably 3 manager types that knew something was going on. So we're starting to the web is starting to grow a little bit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oddly, this though, how about this one? This is where I would just have fought the whole thing is the wording. Like if you have the facts, you pound the facts as a lawyer. And if you have the law, you pound the law. And if you have nothing, you pound the table. Michigan's pounding the table. But you actually were allowed to send someone to scout Georgia because they weren't technically on the schedule. And that is a loophole that needs to be wrapped up because nowadays with the expanded playoff, this was written, the law was written, or the rule is written 30 years ago. And it just, it's more like, just like, hey guys, don't send anyone to any games. And it was basically done for basketball, but, and that was it. But Georgia wasn't on the schedule. So what this kid told Chris Partridge of saying, I'm going to go to Georgia to scout a game would not be against NCAA rules. So the stupid scheme, and this would be, do I think any of this will work with the Committee on Infractions? I do not. However, I have seen some dumbass arguments work with the Committee on Infractions.
True.
Like, oh, we didn't know that the head of Adidas basketball would meet with our top recruit. Who knew that he and his mom, the kid's mom, would have the room next door? Things like that. Like, what? How would we know? So I've seen some dumbass things. That would be their argument is like, yeah, we were going to send a kid to Georgia because it's not against the rule. And obviously the spirit of the rule here is being annihilated, pile driven into the ground. But you get into these things, you pay the lawyers for 138 pages of this argument.
Yeah. It's interesting that now that you bring it up, Dan, as we've had a full NCAA legislative cycle and we're starting into another one without anybody, to my knowledge, addressing that specific law, rule and just saying no advanced scouting, period. How hard is that? Would that one be to change? Maybe the autonomous four, when they take over for the NCAA, can take care of that. Anyway, my one other point here, that you've got Stallions in person, you've got staff members in person at 8 games, but the others were just family and friends. Why does that matter? Because people outside of the athletic program can commit violations, and they have in a lot of instances over the years in a lot of places. Representatives of university athletic interests or relatives or what have you. So again, this is it seems to me like another, like we're playing an accounting trick here. You say 52, but it's really only 8, but it's only 1. And you know,
I believe in the movie, Connor said his mom was involved.
Yeah. His mom got a ticket. That was in the response. That was definitely, yeah, that was included in there, that his mom.
I would say she could be considered a representative of Michigan's athletic.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I think the NCAA notice of allegations states that these family and friends were working on behalf, right, or as a representative of Michigan. And Michigan is saying, obviously, no, that's not the case and shouldn't be considered that way. Another, like, to me, you know, the most impactful part of this, obviously, is a Sherrone Moore text situation with the deleted text. The NCAA notice of allegation says that Moore deleted 52 text messages between him and Stallions on the very day that we broke the story, October 19th, 2023. And in the response, Michigan and Moore acknowledged that he did delete the text messages. And he told the school that he did it out of a frustration and anger. And I thought this was a really interesting part. In his statement in the document to the school, he basically suggests that he's angry at Stallions and suggests that one person, Stallions, doesn't deserve credit for all the work that coaches and players did. So he deleted all the information. It sounds like he actually deleted Stallions' contact, like in his phone as well. It deleted everything about Stallions in his phone. And it lists pretty much the Michigan response to each text message. Now, I didn't get, there's not a screenshot of the text, but Michigan responds in the response to each one. So you, and it quotes a lot of the text from Stallions to Moore and back and forth. And I it was pretty fascinating, actually, right? There's a lot of really, there's other schools mentioned in there, obviously. I thought a pretty funny one was Stallions texting Moore before their game against Nebraska saying, quote, "Nebraska is screwed," because he could decipher Nebraska signals so well. They won that game 34-3. There's a lot of interesting stuff in there. But Michigan contends, despite there being a lot of text about sign stealing, right, there's not text about the in-person advanced scouting system, which is the illegal thing. And so that Michigan contends that the texts are innocuous and unrelated.
Michigan may have an argument there. I mean, you know, that there's nothing in those texts that just is a flat out gotcha. Now, appearance of guilt? Yeah, I'm angry at Connor for doing this to our program. Come on, man. He's worried about what's in the texts. You don't delete that stuff because you're angry at Connor Stallions for jeopardizing the program or getting the credit. I'm not buying that argument, but it sounds feasible that there's nothing in the text messages that says, aha, Sharon Moore knew they were impermissibly stealing signs.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's a tough sell to me. Maybe. You never know what someone's motivation is, but I was so disgusted by this guy, I decided to delete that I had ever talked to him. Now, again, he deleted it, then they were able to mirror it and get it back. So if you're planning on actually committing a real murder or some real crime, don't think your phone is going to save you. Yep. That delete thing, if the NCAA can figure it out. But it does not, the whole bit is, and this is what I think with Connor Stallions, is Connor Stallions is a maniacal personality and competitor. He is very, very smart. And he is a Navy, U.S. Naval Academy grad, and he is obsessed with Michigan football. The man went to the Naval Academy so he could be a better Michigan football coach one day. That's how dedicated he was. That is not an easy task. You don't just apply. I talked to his parents once, and they said, hey, he did it all on his own. They said, can you drive me down to Annapolis in 2 weeks, they're having a thing for prospective students. And they said, you want to go to the Naval Academy? Like, where is this coming from? You have to do all this work. You have to talk to a senator. And Connor's like, yeah, I already did all that. Right. And they just, okay. I mean, that's the hardest school to go to other than equal with Army and Navy and Air Force. But like, it is nobody does this. He could have just gone to Michigan. But he's like, no, one day I will be superior. So he is a maniacal. He has a thousands of pages of his manifesto, which, of course, is famous, all his stuff. And I think that he was able to ascertain 90, 95% of the signs the way everybody else does it in the sport. But when you have that personalities combined, a lot of times cheating is trying to get that it's almost like making sure you have 100%, right?
Right.
Why the hell did Barry Bonds need to do anything?
Right.
Dude was one of the greatest. He was one of the all. He was the best player in the league, or one of them, without anything. Right. And you get that combination. So then he went. So I would probably agree there wasn't that much of an advantage. That said, he still broke the rule. The rule to me is where it's interesting. And I don't think it will work, but bylaw 11.6.1, all it says, off campus, in-person scouting of future opponents in the same season is prohibited. That's the whole law. That's the whole bylaw. It doesn't define by who, it doesn't define by what, it doesn't define how, it doesn't. So that's the wiggle room. But I don't think they ever really proved that Sharon Moore was like, okay, so they're looking at Connor Stallions is he's our sign stealer. He's really good at it. His other skill wasn't just stealing the signs, but his ability to decipher them really quickly and allow particularly the defense or the offense, but particularly the defense to call the defensive formation after, because you can have all the plays, but you have to get the info to your team, which is really hard to do. And he was very good at that. So they're looking at him and saying, hey, This guy's good at it. Of course, he's going to know the signs. That's his job. But they don't have Sharon Moore on, yeah, I know how you got that last 5, 10% of the signs. Nor would it be unusual for someone on the staff to have have the signs. As you said, you're trading with Rutgers, trading with everybody. Everybody admits they trade. So is that enough to get clear Sharon Moore? Probably not. But I think I don't know what these text messages seem beneficial to Sharon on that case.
Yeah, this is going to be the real fight. And I think there was discussion about a negotiated resolution. You know, they always try to do that, right? They always try to come, just like any lawsuit, before a lawsuit's filed, can we come to a settlement of some sort or before it goes to court? And it's similar with this, as y'all know, like try to come up with a resolution. And I think during the conversations of trying to reach a resolution, there was real disagreement on a punishment related specifically to Sharon Moore. I think the NCAA probably wants to go more severe than Michigan believes is warranted. And that's where the real fight is going to be in this. The NCAA now, a lot of people are asking, like, what happens now? You know, the NCAA they'll have a response, I believe, at some point, and then they'll go to the committee on infractions. It's almost certainly bound to the committee on infractions either way. And Pat probably knows a little bit more about that process, but and how they operate. But they have discretion on however to rule, I believe.
Let's get to that process and some predictions right after this. All right, Pat. So where are we with that? With this? How's this thing work?
I mean, if we follow the normal protocol, the NCAA, I believe, will have 6 to 8 weeks to respond to the response. And then we're done with the preamble. Although Ross noted in the story that there could be, I think, a pre-hearing meeting, right?
Pre-conference hearing. They want to discuss the call that came from within the Big House, the tipster.
Right.
The tipster.
Right.
Yeah.
They want the tipster revealed. There's no doubt about it. Michigan wants the NCAA to reveal the tipster in order for that tipster to be used as a witness in the other violations. So that's going to be, if they grant, I haven't seen, if I guess in the NCAA's response, we'll know if they grant this pre-conference hearing, but yes, pre-conference hearing and then obviously COI.
Do we have witness protection does the NCAA have witness protection program for the tipster?
I mean, I kind of laugh, but you're serious, right? I mean, this is a serious matter that could really jeopardize the life of a of this tipster. I mean, hey, I will tell you guys now, there's a person mentioned in my story that's in the Michigan response that's, you know, getting threats right now because of his name in the it's a crazy situation.
Chill out, everyone. Okay. I don't think a guy's gonna get rubbed out. Like, you don't have to go Henry Hill and like Goodfellas and go eat spaghetti with ketchup or whatever. But who the hell knows? Who the hell knows? Like, this is not good.
Yeah. And like trying to out this person. There seems to be plenty of evidence beyond whatever the tipster told them. Namely, and again, Connor Stallion standing on the sideline in Spartan Stadium, but whatever other video evidence has already been obtained. So we'll see where that goes. Yes, all right. So the NCAA will respond to the response, and then we're done with the preamble, and then there will be an infractions hearing. So we're looking maybe at 2 8-week periods. So 16 weeks from now is what, 4 months, maybe in May or something, we have an infractions hearing. And then presumably after that, another 6 to 8 weeks before there is a ruling. And then probably an appeal to the ruling. Although we are, and now the appeals process, I believe, has been tightened. We'll see where that goes. But so, you know, we still got another half a year, I would say, of content stallions before we get a ruling here. And the other question, okay, the two big questions, I think, are Sherrone Moore penalties and institutional penalties. If this is level one aggravated and a failure to monitor, are we looking at a postseason ban for next year when Michigan should be better, perhaps, than they were this year, although some pretty big defensive losses. But is that something that would be on the table here? And if you remember, I was trying to see what the actual roster of the Committee on Infractions is. The Committee on Infractions people were not terribly happy with Michigan during all of this dance. And I think that there are some people that would probably like to put amazing blue skin on the wall.
Well, there's a lot of repeat offending here.
Yeah.
There's also the side argument that they already suffered a penalty in losing Harbaugh for three games.
Right.
And the NCAA will say, well, that's a Big Ten suspension, not an NCAA suspension, which I would say is accurate. It's factual. However, that's a sort of level of dirty pool, too. I mean, even the feds don't do that. Like, you either get charged state court or you get charged in federal court. So are you punishing for the second time? And how much, obviously, Harbaugh's the easy person to throw the book at here is Harbaugh.
Right. He's immaterial at this point.
Immaterial. But did Michigan as a program suffer by losing its head coach for three games? Now, they won all the games, but does that matter? Like, it wasn't really a punishment because you won. I mean, they tried to derail the season. They did whatever they could at the time to derail the season. And it's more than just Jim Harbaugh having to sit. They tried to lessen Michigan's advantages by suspending Harbaugh. So what part, have we ever had a case like that, Pat, where we've already had a punishment?
Yeah, there definitely have been.
And people sit themselves, right?
Right, self-imposed. And obviously, there's not a lot of self-imposition here from Michigan. They fired Chris Partridge, and they went along. Fired Stallions, yeah. And eventually, they went along with the Big Ten suspension of Harbaugh, but that was after threatening to go to court, right? They were going to sue. On that one. So, you know, I think Michigan would have a hard time arguing, you know, yes, we took these violations very seriously and self-imposed meaningful sanctions. I mean, they can try, but if I was the Committee on Infractions, I might say, nah, you really didn't.
Ross, in this report, is there any discussion of, there was another story, there's a lot of stories have come out, and this is what's worrisome about this whistleblower situation. Or when we're throwing names out there, because there was enough people on believing that somehow Ryan Day's brother was involved, and he apparently was not, even though there was no proof of that. But you get a name out there, and all of a sudden, or Ryan Day did it, and there's no indication at all that he did. So so you can throw names out there. But there was discussion at Chris Partridge, I don't even want to say it was him. Somebody was destroying evidence and like a computer got destroyed. Did that happen?
That is, Michigan says that the NCAA's allegation against Partridge, which is, I believe, I'm going to pull up this real quick here. The allegation is that Partridge basically impeded the investigation by telling telling an athlete to lie to investigators. The Michigan says that did not happen, and refutes that allegation. It says that it terminated Partridge because he disregarded the institution's directive to not discuss the investigation with anybody. Quote, his failure to abide by the institution's directive does not constitute a violation of any NCAA bylaw. So they're refuting that.
There's no discussion of this destroyed evidence, seems to be.
No, there's no discussion of that, just that he told an athlete
something.
To,
something
to lie. Now there is.
I don't know that there would be some blowback on did he tell him to lie. I think is
right.
From, at least the, from the Partridge
there
camp.
Is some mention of destroying evidence with Connor Stallions. Right. One of the allegations is that Stallions impeded the investigation by failing to preserve pertinent information. The NCAA says, quote, number one, he declined to produce his personal phone for imaging. Number two, he withheld and removed hard drives from his office. Number three, he put relevant information into a backpack and instructed a staffer to take it to an unpaid student intern's house where Stallions could pick it up later. Number four, he instructed a student intern to delete potentially relevant information. Michigan says all but one of those is unsubstantiated. So the one that it says that it did not refute is number four, which is, so at some point Stallions, Michigan did acknowledge, instructed a student intern to delete or destroy relevant information.
And did the student intern do that?
I don't, or
just ask.
I don't know that it says, I assume he did, but I'm not sure that it got into that specifically.
Okay.
Yeah. There was some good folklore out there that, again, I Michigan says is unsubstantiated. I don't know exactly what the NCAA stance is, or again, if this was just folklore that said backpack that may have contained hard drives or whatever is in the bottom of a lake somewhere near Ann Arbor.
Throw the murder weapon into a into like the river. Get the crew team out there searching for it. Does the NCAA own any boats? Can they do a...
Do they own diving equipment?
Yeah, what do they call
those
guys?
Get to the bottom of a lake.
Send the diving equipment. It's like looking for Aaron Hernandez.
It's cold to do it now. They might need to wait till closer to the...
Aaron Hernandez's gun. Where is it? Where is it? Did Shayana take it out or not? Well, yeah.
Dan, I have an answer for your question. This document was so long that I didn't read every little detail, but I went back and... Yes, the staff member that Stallions said to delete pertinent information did delete pertinent information. In fact, the NCAA interviewed him, the person, and the person said on the day that we broke the story, he arrived at the office and told Stallions or asked Stallions, What do you want me to do today? Basically, like what my assignment is today. And Stallions basically, according to the Michigan response, which I think cites the notice of allegations, Stallions said, well, just basically delete everything and clear your email and clear all the videos and all that. So the staff member did listen. He said he told the NCAA investigators indoor the university, I guess, attorneys, that Stallions told him to do it, but he was already going to do it. And he already had deleted some stuff. He often deleted a lot of things, a lot of the videos that he had taken. He said he arrived in the office and, he said, I was like, did you see this article? And he was like, yeah, talking about Stallions. and obviously this is quoting him now, obviously like already started deleting stuff a little bit. Most of the videos were already gone, but he was like, just clear out your email and everything like that.
Yeah. That's not going to be too good. That's not going to be too good for Michigan. I think the cover-up is worse than the crime, is how they're viewing it. I still wonder how they were able to make Jim Harbaugh meeting with the recruit during COVID when everyone specifically knew you're not allowed to meet with the recruit and the head coach violating that be a level two. And yet this... which I just really feel is more like a Deflategate type thing than like a Houston Astros stealing the signs, because everybody can steal the signs. It's just, how did you steal the signs? I just can't get to where this is the massive scandal that other people did. I just can't get there. But conversely, the it's just a cheeseburger never made any sense to me, because that to me was – the violation that should have been much more serious and should have been punished much more severely. So I just don't see eye to eye on either of the ways that they're going after this case. One more severely, one less severely.
Dan, why do you got to bring up the cheeseburger?
The cheeseburger's their thing.
Remember it's the NCAA COVID. Statement on the cheeseburger a year or two ago?
It was more than a cheeseburger.
That's more than a cheeseburger.
It was. It was.
Yes, it was more than a cheeseburger.
That would be a violation in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that was nothing. And yet this, when they all steal the signs, you just stole it in a different manner.
They went to the garbage can like the Astros here. You know what I mean?
No, they don't get that big of an advantage.
They tried. They did things nobody else did.
They all hit the garbage can. They all hit the garbage can. That's the thing. They all are it just doesn't make any sense to me, that part. I just can't get there. They all
don't send somebody in disguise to
that's an different though.
Sideline.
They get the same garbage can. Bang them. And they can't, they got to prove Connor went to Connor Stallions is going to get a show cause. Jim Harbaugh is going to get a show cause whether he deserves it or not.
Another one.
Who cares? He's going to get another one. The part where he didn't turn over 6,000 emails in like 48 hours while he's preparing, that was garbage, but they're going to get him on that. That was ridiculous, but they're going to get him on that. Fine. They're going to fine Michigan some massive number. It's going to be a hell of a party at the Slippery Noodle that night.
Oh, yeah.
$10-15 million, whatever. I believe they will go after Sherrone Moore. They're going to try to suspend him. 2 games, 4 games. I don't know. Is there enough here? Debatable, but that's what they're going to want to suspend Sherrone Moore. The thing is, what could you possibly get to punish Michigan that would matter other than a postseason ban? The NCAA's punishments, their sanctions, are rooted in 2019 thinking, not 2025. Used to crush a program, cut their scholarship numbers down, cut their official visits so kids can't afford to fly up and see your campus. Things like that. Prevent KIs from going on the road. That's not how you get players anymore. I don't think Bryce Underwood cares if he's on scholarship or not. His 529 is flush, man.
He's on Mrs. Larry Ellison IV scholarship. Yes. That's a pretty good scholarship.
Yeah. The $30,000 or whatever it costs to go in state at the University of Michigan is not going to be a real impediment here. You want kids to come to campus, you set up some other system and they come and make an appearance. Like the penalties cannot hit a school. Tennessee was the most recent major infractions case from the Jeremy Pruitt situation. They were just in the playoff. Their program's humming. It's great. If you have the intelligence, the leadership, and the wherewithal, big deal. Tennessee shrugged off that thing like it was nothing. And Michigan can too. So other than the postseason ban, I don't know what they can really... Obviously losing your head coach for 2 to 4 games or... Hey, who knows how many games would impact the season. But the postseason ban, which they have said in the past they don't want to do anymore because it impacts a bunch of players who weren't there. And with the transfer portal, that's even more with the roster churn. Other than that, I don't know what they can do to any school that makes it hurt.
Yeah, I mean, your point is completely valid as far as like scholarship reductions not really even being a useful sanction anymore, as with several others. The two things you can get them on are suspensions and postseason participation. And the NCAA has talked out of both sides of its mouth on postseason bans. They did say with Tennessee that basically Tennessee richly deserved one, but they weren't going to give it because they don't want to be still in the business of giving out postseason bans. But I specifically asked, and I'm sorry I don't have the name in front of me, the chair of the Committee on Infractions, this was maybe 2 years ago, will you ever give another one? And they're like, yes, that's the postseason ban remains part of our sanctioning mechanisms. So they've given both signals there. And this is one case where I think it will be in play. I'm not saying they'll give it, but I guarantee it will be under discussion. And if you look at the extremely contentious nature of this infractions case and the repeat violator history of Michigan, and the ingenuity, if you will, of some of the violations here, I think that they will look at this and say, absolutely, level one aggravated, we're going for a postseason ban. And in a 12-team playoff era where the Michigans of the world are expecting we should be in contention for the playoff every year, it would be a significant penalty.
Yeah. Yeah. The repeat offender thing is certainly something to keep an eye on, right? Especially with Sherrone Moore, because he was involved in the COVID era recruiting hamburger situation. And so that's just two strikes in 2 years. And then there's a third strike that happened. That was the first one. Maybe 2010. It lists it actually in the Michigan response that I have. It actually lists all the lovely NCAA investigations that the program's gone through. And so it's three and like 14 years or so. So the repeat violator thing, I mean, Michigan's currently under probation, right? 3 years of probation from the COVID era recruiting violation hamburger situation.
Well, we will see if they drop that down, because that to me is it. Now, at the same time, I don't think they should drop it down because the other things don't carry any weight. It's like, you don't say, I'm going to give you 25 years in prison, and they say, well, we remodeled the prison and it's really nice in there, and then say, okay, death penalty. that's their problem. They should have addressed they should find new ways to sanction. Then again, who knows if there's even any more cases after this. But we'll see. All right, let's get back with Brett Bielema weighing in. Brett Bielema weighed in. We got to get to it. All right, our old friend Brett Bielema, Illinois coach, been known to speak his mind. He's actually one of the reasons I can't take the case too seriously, because he was on camera saying, yeah, we get all the signs from everybody else, sends it to us, but that's okay. But this is the worst thing that ever has happened. It's white collar crime versus smash and grab, but that's a different issue. We like Brett talking, and we like Brett tweeting, and Brett tweeted, and he went and followed some made comments on a couple of accounts. Darko State News brought up some old Jim Harbaugh videos. There's one when he's with the 49ers saying if you cheat to win, then you've already lost. Brett Bielema said, really? Why did you leave? Was looking forward to playing, but understand why you ran to the NFL. Put a little NFL logo in there. It's pretty funny. See you in the future and can't wait, family. Hashtag ill, all that. Mm-hmm. He also, there was another one where Harbaugh was waxing on about one of the reasons he loves Judge Judy. And he has 90 Judge Judy episodes on his DVR when he watches, when he has a free moment. It's because Judge Judy demands honesty in her courtroom. Tell the truth always. If you lie, it's over. Brett B just did a crying emoji and a football on that. Pat?
Yeah, hey, always glad to hear from Big Brett. He's got something to say. I don't think he's going to get his chance to meet again with Jim Harbaugh unless he's planning on going to the league, because I don't see Harbaugh ever coaching in college again. So there's probably a little bit of empty bluster involved here, where you can take some shots at somebody that you'll probably never have to coach against again. But I suspect Brett Bielema speaks for many other coaches who were put off by Harbaugh, you know, basically evading sanctions here, going to the NFL. He was trying to get to the NFL before we even knew for sure there would be sanctions. So I'm not sure it was a complete cut and run, but it was conveniently timed. And the other part of it is that, yeah, Harbaugh has said some things that are complete disconnects from what he's done. You know, he has not been an always tell the truth guy. Ask the NCAA. And so that's one of the reasons they're in this situation. I think that's put off some people, a little bit of the hypocrisy there. But, you know, Bielema's got a good team. Maybe he's feeling it, you know, with number 9 in the preseason, too early SI top 10. We talked about him on the last episode. I don't know whether Illinois plays Michigan in 2025, but I hope they do.
Played him last year. Beat him.
Yeah, beat him.
Yeah. Now, I like Illinois punching up. Yeah. Punching up that. Ran to the NFL is a little much.
Yeah.
But we like a little much. Little much. All right. The more there is a dispute between all these guys, the better. We are pro-coach fights.
Remember the, was it a dispute that Brett got into? Was it Luke Fickell? Remember the big hubbub? We talked about it on the pod, I think, over the summer. Remember this? Some kind of, something involved with a game and a play call late in the game. No? No bells ringing?
I thought
you brought it up.
There's a lot of fights. Yeah, he might have.
It was a Wisconsin-Illinois game, Brett, I thought. It was a call late in the game.
Remember he was into it with Beamer in the
Beamer,
in the bowl
game. I remember
yeah,
that
it was
game.
Beamer, too. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Old Bert, you know, he likes to pick a good fight.
God bless you. God bless you. Yeah. All right. That's our show. We'll be back next week with more. Appreciate everyone listening. We will talk to you later.